welcome to another edition of International House of Combat. Kelly Nelson here, and I'm joined as always by Steve Willey. How are you doing this week, Steve?
I'm doing well. I'm excited to go back in the vaults and check out some rare matches from across the world and escape our own world.
Yes. Yeah. Podcasting is one of the great escapes right now, and there's not much current wrestling going on, and the wrestling that is going on is before empty arenas with no fans. So to get, you know, the true wrestling experience in April 2020, we do have to go back in time, and I love going back in time anyway, and specifically to the 1980s, and today we're doing that. And today we're going up north of the border, north of the American border, to my home nation of Canada for the first time. And like I've explained before, the one cheat I have on this is that we'll consider Canadian as international. We'll consider everything from an American perspective, even though I'm Canadian. And so we're going to see some interesting stuff today. First up, we're going to Toronto from 1980, Maple Leaf Gardens. And this is Jim Crockett Promotions, JCP.
Wow.
Yeah. They took over the booking in the city around 1977, I think the summer of 77, after the Sheik, the famous original Sheik. He had a run in Toronto, which was very successful for about 5 years. And then from about 74 on, not so much. He kind of overstayed his welcome. And by 77, he was almost basically forced out of the city by Frank Tunney, who was the longtime promoter in Toronto. And at that time, Frank Tunney made a deal with Jim Crockett Jr. to use the talent from JCP for Toronto, which was a brilliant move on Frank Tunney's part, because in 1977, JCP was in the middle of a golden age and had a ton of great talent, all young, all guys that would be huge stars in the following decade in the 80s. And so they ran with JCP talent in Toronto up until 1984, actually, when Vince Jr. came in and finally basically acquired the rights to run in Toronto. But I won't go into that now. So this is from 1980. This is, you know, right in the middle of JCP's run in Toronto. Toronto, with a long history as a wrestling city. Maple Leaf Gardens, one of the top wrestling buildings historically. Lots of great sellout crowds. The fans there were legendary for being amongst the most rowdy in all of North America, even more rowdy than New York and Philly and Boston at times. So this is, like I said, a JCP match. And Steve, as part of the Place to Be Nation, you guys are doing a greatest WCW match of all time project. And
yes.
I guess the perimeters, though, are 1981 to 2001. Am I correct?
Correct. This would fall under it if it was 81, I believe, because it is under Jim Crockett Promotions. Mm-hmm. So I would, from based on what you're saying, so if it was a little bit newer, and we just actually have a main event coming out this week, which we looked at Ricky Steamboat and Dustin Rhodes versus the Enforcers. So this is
cool. Yeah.
You know, whenever you need to go to somebody, Ricky Steamboat's a good guy to go to.
Yeah. That match you just mentioned, that's a legendary match. Pre 1981 JCP, I understand why 1981's the cutoff, because that's when the footage on the network starts and then you have consistency from going forward. But prior to 1981, there's not much consistency. There's the garbage tapes that are a bunch of clipped matches, some actual full matches, I think, but mostly clipped matches. That's mostly stuff from the 70s. And then there is a little bit of this Maple Leaf wrestling from Toronto that seemed to just kind of turn up out of nowhere, at least in my circles, wrestling circles, about 4 or 5 years ago. and I don't know too much about it. The match we're going to be watching today is from a Japanese taping, and I'll explain that once we get into it. So, but as far as the other footage, I think it was stuff that was actually probably on TV in Canada at the time, but I should have did a bit more research, but I didn't. So what we have here is from June 29th, 1980, Maple Leaf Gardens in Toronto, and it's a tag team match. And actually, that's the theme of today. Other than we're looking at exclusively Canadian footage, we're also looking at exclusively tag team footage. So this is a tag match. This is Ray the Crippler Stevens and Jimmy Snuka, who were NWA Tag Team Champions. And I think they were the title holders at this point in time. And their opponents, the aforementioned Ricky Steamboat and Jay Youngblood. And this was a very famous team for JCP in the early 80s. On the old Titans of Wrestling podcast I did years ago, they came to New York, Steamboat and Jay Youngblood, and wrestled at Madison Square Garden. I believe that match was May 1980, so a month before this one. And that match is super cool. It's Steamboat and Youngblood against Toru Kamada and Bulldog Dick Brower. And Steamboat and Youngblood are totally unknown to the New York crowd and, you know, minutes in, just because they were so great and such great baby faces, the New York crowd is totally behind them and they get molten hot reactions. But that was the only match they ever worked in New York, believe it or not. So here we are in Toronto, and we'll go right into it. Steve, do you have much familiarity with the wrestlers at this point in time in their careers, 1980?
Not this early. Snuka a little bit. And Steamboat, Steamboat and Youngblood more from like the 83 time period with Starrcade.
Right. Yes.
Getting big more on TV, and the TV was coming around the country at that point. And obviously Steamboat from then on, I'm very familiar with. Stevens, I'm more aware of his stuff from when he went into WWF. That would have been, like 83-ish as well. And then he was in AWA doing like commentary and a little bit of wrestling with Bockwinkel, a little bit of managing.
Yeah.
But not from this time period.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see what kind of Ray Stevens we get here. And like I said, Steamboat and Youngblood were awesome based on what they did in New York a month prior. So this could be a treat. This match is 22 minutes, 27 seconds. So it may be the entire match. I hope it's the entire match, but I'm not totally sure. A lot of these Maple Leaf Gardens matches that are available on YouTube from this time period are pretty short, 4, 5, 6, 7 minutes. So it's a treat to see a lengthy one. So we'll do the countdown and then we'll start. And we'll go on go as always. 3, 2, 1, go. Okay. So we have Japanese writing on the screen. Like I said, this was taped for Japan. And the reason it was taped for Japan is because earlier on in the evening, we had a 2 out of 3 falls match with Giant Baba and Jumbo Tsuruta against Bruiser Brody and Scott Irwin. And also Abdul the Butcher took on Dory Funk Jr. on the undercard as well. So they were all tied.
My God.
Yeah, tied.
What a card.
Yeah, tied to All Japan Wrestling at that time. The Destroyer was on the undercard too, another one from All Japan, another legendary wrestler. Yeah, the talent on this card was pretty astounding, actually. There's a few matches involving guys that I have barely heard of before. And the last match listed on Wrestling Data is Hussein Arab against Angelo Mosca. And Hussein Arab was the Iron Sheik, of course. And Angelo Mosca was a legendary football player in Canada, and became a wrestler and was actually a pretty top, at least as far as a draw goes. He was a top draw in Canada for a long time, but infamously a pretty poor worker. And it's interesting that was the match that closed the show, apparently. So this is the Maple Leaf Gardens we all know and love, with a ramp. That was always a feature of Maple Leaf Gardens. And look at this.
Steamboat is just jacked here.
Yes.
Like, his upper body is, might be the have the biggest upper body out of anybody, even Snuka.
Yeah, Snuka looks a little more slim than you'd normally associate his body type with, especially when he gets to New York a few years later and he gets absolutely huge. Steamboat's rocking a mustache at this time, which was a rare look for him. And Snuka's got boots on, which at least in his WWF years he didn't have until the very, very end of 1991-92. Wow. Super hot start by Steamboat here.
Did you ever watch any Dragon Gate Japan wrestling?
I have. It's been many, many years. Like over 10 years ago.
That sequence reminded me a lot of Dragon Gate in terms of the sheer speed of running the ropes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, Steamboat was so fast. Youngblood was really good, too. Definitely a guy who's lost to history because he passed away at a very young age. I believe he was only 30 in, I think it was 1985 that he passed away. Stevens, a legend in San Francisco in the 1960s. Very influential for people who grew up watching wrestling at that time. Ric Flair was influenced big by Stevens when Stevens went to the AWA, late 60s, early 70s. A worker that it's just tough to get a real read on him based on the footage that's out there, because most of the footage we have of Stevens is from the latter half of his career, when I think he was pretty broken down and just not really capable of being the performer he once was. But we'll see what he's like here.
The guy that Bobby Heenan worked quite a bit with and would always talk about Ray Stevens in interviews and how much he respected him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Stevens was known for being quite a prankster, too, and doing all kinds of wild stuff. And that individual out there with a cigar, I believe that's Lars Anderson. Or is it Gene Anderson? Actually, I think it's Gene Anderson, who was managing Stevens and Snuka at this point in time.
He looks like a local indie manager.
Yeah, kind of.
Just some guy.
Yeah, just some dude. Yeah, I don't know too much about the original Andersons, like Lars and Gene, well before my time, of course. And there's just not much footage of them. But Gene and Ole Anderson were the original Minnesota Wrecking Crew, and very, very famous in the 70s, very popular as a tag team, or as not popular as far as crowd favorites, but popular as far as a draw and being used on top.
I enjoy the style of very quick movements,
yeah,
followed by a little bit of a slowing down, followed by quick movements.
Yeah.
Gets you to appreciate each spot. You get to appreciate each spot as it's happening.
Yeah. Textbook babyface shine here from Steamboat and Youngblood.
Now, did you end up watching the Jimmy Snuka Dark Side of the Ring
recently
aired?
No, I haven't watched it. I haven't watched any of the current season for whatever reason. I did listen to the podcast that Conrad Thompson and the producers of the show did on it.
Okay.
Yeah. Was it any good?
It was okay. I mean, they interviewed the sheriff who was involved, who seemed like a member of the Keystone Cops.
Right.
like Snuka just fed him a story and they believed it. They had the Tonga kid on, who was apparently in the car the night that Nancy died.
Yeah.
He either did it or let her die. It was one of the two.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think there's any, you know, doubt that he was responsible for, her death. But we'll never know the true story. The Tonga kid thing is a new revelation, and some people have doubted. Even on the podcast that I referenced, the producers were kind of suggesting that Tonga may have got, you know, his days mixed up and he wasn't actually there that night, and it was another night he was thinking about, but who knows? It's definitely made me sort of, the last couple of years with Snuka, every time I watch a match of his, it's in the back of your head, almost in the same way it is with Chris Benoit. Not to that degree, but kind of similar, where you just can't help but think about that incident when you see Jimmy Snuka.
Well, with Benoit, we lived through it.
Yeah.
You know, and Snuka was 30, and he was so beloved by, you know, many people in our circles who were really hardcore into wrestling, whereas the Snuka thing really, we knew more about it years and years later, and we were, you know, kids when it happened.
Yeah, but then it was in the news just before he died, right? Because they actually, they decided they were going to go to trial, but then it was determined he was in no state to, or not fit for trial, and then he died literally, I think, a week later or something. It was very, very short.
Yeah, it was like a week or two.
Yeah. So a lot of arm work here.
Huge
early
shine, shines.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the shine, the long shine, that's not unusual. In this era, some of them would go on for 10 minutes straight. Babyface shine. Snuka does look dangerous, though. He's got facial hair as well.
Working the camera, telling the camera to shut up, because there's nobody really on that side of the...
No. Yeah, the whole ramp thing in Toronto is... I've never really read about an explanation as to why they had the ramp. It was a unique feature to Maple Leaf Gardens. I think it was mostly because I think there were some incidents in the 40s and 50s where the fans got too out of control and wrestlers got hurt. So that's why they had the ramp to protect the wrestlers. Later on, of course, WCW sort of inherited it adapted it, I guess you could say, beginning around 89 or thereabouts.
Yeah.
I think it was before the 90s, but not...
Like 93?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it was every pay-per-view and Clash of the Champions had the ramp, almost,
right.
I think. And it's not like... Well, I think maybe when they started using the... I think more for WCW, it was more like a way to make them look different to WWF, and not because of concerns of wrestler safety. It was more like a presentation deal with WCW.
And you could play with it a little bit, too.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. You would have brawls spill out onto the ramp, and guys get moves get put on them on the ramp and stuff, and that would be like on the concrete floor sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. That was dabbled with in Japan and a few pay-per-views for ECW, too.
Yes, yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, in Japan, they've always had sort of that elevated... Like, the ring in New Japan is elevated above the ground. So the heels have finally took control here. Jay Youngblood's been in the ring for quite a while.
Yeah. Like Steven's front face lock there, kind of yanking up on him instead of just laying on the mat.
Yeah. Yeah, good stuff. Joking now with the referee distracted. Now we're getting some heel 101 work.
The crowd's responding too.
Yeah, well, Steamboat was huge in Toronto. Him and when they first started running shows in Toronto JCP was right around the time that Steamboat and Flair started feuding for the first time. And that was a big main event program in the city. Oh, wow. Jeez, Snuka was definitely a lot more spry at this point, doing a move just like that.
A springboard, yeah. In 1980.
I know, I was going to say it was very modern looking. Wow. It's also interesting that the camera angle is pretty much exactly the same as it would be when the WWF began running shows in Toronto. It would be always consistently like this. Toronto had that unique look, camera angle, focusing it like this. Hot tag! Steamboat on fire. Oh, wow.
A lot of histrionics with Steamboat.
Yeah. Yes. Big suplex. Ooh. Huge chop.
Receipt for Snuka's that took control.
Yeah.
That's how they got control earlier on, was Snuka did the same thing.
Right. Ooh. Well, when Steamboat first came to WWF in 1985, he was actually teamed with Snuka for a brief period. They even had a name, but it's escaping me right now.
Yeah, they're both experts in the martial arts.
Yes. Something like the Island Connection or something like that. I can't remember.
South Pacific Connection.
There you go. But yeah, it was very short-lived because Snuka was gone by the summer of 85 from WWF. Okay, both men down. It's been wrestled at a pretty fast pace. Crowd is rabid. Jimmy just keeps interfering. Oh my.
Hey, tagged a little bit in 78 and 79 at Mid-Atlantic as well.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I always forget that Snuka had a relatively long run in JCP Mid-Atlantic, off and on, but still. It's not a territory you associate, or at least I don't associate with Snuka for whatever reason.
Didn't he come back a little bit in the mid-80s, but just very shortly?
Or
late 80s, maybe?
Yeah, he was in AWA for a while, 86, 87. I don't think he ever went back to JCP. I think he may have burned a bridge there. Because they were bringing back all kinds of has-beens. Well,
yeah.
I guess I shouldn't say that. Yes. But guys that were definitely past their prime, like Junkyard Dog and Iron Cheek and Bob Orton and stuff.
Okay, I'm just... He was there for the Slamboree reunion. That was.
Oh, there you go. Yes, it was that him and Don Morocco were on the same team, which at the time I thought was quite strange because I only knew of them as rivals in the WWF.
And showed up on Nitro in 2000.
Oh, wow.
to give Jeff Jarrett a splash off the cage.
Oh, I vaguely remember that. Oh, wow, what is this maneuver by Snuka? Some sort of claw.
Like almost like a claw chokeslam, almost.
Yeah.
Nice, he's got his hand around his neck. It was like a...
Yeah,
like an
first,
early version of a chokeslam.
Yeah, I thought it was more like a stomach claw or something on the chest, but interesting. Clearly a move that he used a lot, it seems like, but I can't recall him ever using it in the WWF. But he was always a babyface in the WWF, so wouldn't make sense for him to use a move like that, really.
Ricky Steamboat, give up!
Wow.
Rabid going for the comeback of the women in the front row.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this would have been a major match on the card, that's for sure. Just checking if it was for the tag belt. Doesn't say here on Wrestling Data. I think Snuka and Stevens even won like Tag Team of the Year in PWI, I want to say, in 19... I guess it was maybe 80 or maybe it was 79. One of the original PWI Tag Team of the Year winners. And I remember seeing that as a kid. And
thinking, I don't even know.
Yeah, I thought it was weird that they teamed because I knew of the future when they would feud in the WWF, and it was a very bloody feud. It was the feud that actually turned Snuka babyface in New York, and Stevens gave him like 3 pile drivers on the floor, on the concrete, on TV. It was a really violent angle for the time. And I remember as a kid thinking it was weird that they were teammates earlier in their careers.
No, duck under.
Wow. Yeah, they've got the crowd just ready to explode here for this tag.
Literally people jumping up and down.
Yeah. Made it. Wow. House of Fire. Oh, wow. Yeah, that's been a really good match.
A jumping split to celebrate before he,
yeah.
Before he even did anything.
Oh, wow. Big leg drop. Oh, Snuka able to escape. Oh.
Oops.
Sleeper.
I don't know what was going on with Snuka there.
I know, yeah. I guess it was supposed to be a tag, but I think he totally missed. But anyway. Oh. Steamboat.
Snuka. And Stevens, tag team of the year in 1980, you were correct.
Okay, good. See, I still got it. I was a 5-time champion for Brainbuster back in the day. Some of my more recent trivia appearances were not as glorious as those, though.
Well, like the last... Ooh, I thought he had him there. Yeah, like some of the last 5 to 10 years are pretty hard.
The last one I was part of, I had 10 questions, And I only got one right. It was embarrassing. That was a place to be. I think it was the 500th episode, actually. I made it through the first round, but I got totally destroyed in the second round. And I kind of vowed to, I retired from wrestling trivia after that, although I may make a comeback someday. Well, I think we have a time limit draw. Because I don't think.
Yeah, lights went on.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Maybe this was even the last match of the night. It's like.
Yeah, curfew matchup. People are just flying out of there.
Yeah, it must have been. Yeah, because, yeah, people are leaving. They want them out of there as soon as possible. Interesting. So let's see. Yeah, it was about 20 minutes. 20-minute draw. Wow, that was a hot match. That's
yeah.
That's pretty. It was pretty good. I'd say in the 3.5 star range or thereabouts. And yes, Snuka and Stevens were the tag team champs because Gene Anderson had the belts there post match. Well, what did you think of that one,
Steve? I wonder how it's how. I really enjoyed it. I'm just wondering what it's like to wrestle a match when the light church is going to go on at some point.
Yeah.
Like you don't know exactly when the finish is going to be.
No. I mean, the referee may have known and gave them a heads up or something. But yeah, it was pretty abrupt finish. But yeah, that was a pretty hot match. Stevens, I guess you would say he was the least of the four in the match as far as standing up.
Much.
Yeah. I mean, he bumped not too bad at times, but it was the Steamboat Youngblood show, and Snuka and Stevens were just there to make them look awesome, especially in a match where they're not going to drop the straps and you got to make the baby faces right. Look great. So yeah, mission accomplished there. Snuka, wow. Like I said, much slimmer than we would normally think of him. And then that springboard off the top rope, that was so surprising.
Shocking.
Yeah.
That was absolutely shocking.
Yeah.
There was an instance of... Yeah, an instance of using that ramp to your advantage.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, you may as well be creative and do all kinds of spots around it. Yeah, I mean, like I said at the beginning, there's more footage from this time from Toronto, and it's I've watched bits and pieces of it over the years, but it's definitely something that's under the radar, and I would suggest people who are listening to check it out because it's on YouTube, and you never know what you may find. I see the Dory Funk Jr. Abdullah the Butcher match is definitely on YouTube from the same card, I noticed.
I was looking under the person who put it on there. There's a Valiant versus Ventura match. It's a half an hour.
Oh, wow. Jesus. A Jimmy Valiant versus Jesse Ventura for half an hour?
Yeah, the Dory Abdullah match is 30 minutes as well.
Really? Okay, maybe there's multiple ones, because yeah. I thought I saw one that was only 7 or 8 minutes between Dory and Abby. Hmm.
Okay, that just is multiple matches, it looks like. So, yeah, the whole card looks like it's on the same channel, so that might be something to check out.
Yeah, we can go back to that in the future. Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, because these are matches nobody talks about anywhere. Early 80s Maple Leaf Gardens, JCP matches. So yeah, that's something that'll be a good treasure trove of Canadian footage to look forward in the future. Okay, so now we're moving east from the province of Ontario to the province of Quebec. And we're moving ahead 5 years in time to 1985. And yeah, this is a pretty legendary couple matches that we're going to look at. Yeah, I mean, so far on International House of Combat, we've been just doing two matches, but this whole thing in Quebec in 1985, it's basically two matches that are around, well, the first one is 10 minutes, 33 seconds. Second one is 12, 25. And it all tells basically one story. So that's how it's going to go. So we'll do two videos back to back. They'll just bleed into each other. This is the Rougeau brothers, Jacques and Raymond, against the Garvin brothers. The Rougeaus were, of course, real brothers. The Garvins were not real brothers. They were just kayfabe brothers. And this is Jimmy and Ron Garvin. And it's interesting. In the 70s, there was a Garvin brothers team. It was Jimmy, Ron, and Terry Garvin. And they all had bleached blonde hair and did that whole sort of gimmick. And they played up being sort of like effeminate heels, and it got over great in certain areas. I know in Georgia in around 1972-73, they were doing good business. And then I guess they kind of drifted apart. I don't think Jimmy and Ron until later in JCP, a couple of years after this, they would team a bunch. But around this time, I don't think they were teaming much at all. And so they're the heels here. Ron Garvin is, of course, native to Quebec. Jimmy Garvin is not. I guess in the 70s, the Garvins were billed as from the States, I would imagine. Terry Garvin, I believe he was Canadian as well, but I'm not 100% sure about that. But it's wrestling, folks. You can be from wherever you want to be. And the matches we're going to look at are pretty famous in as far as the history of the Montreal, the old Montreal territory goes. The first one we're going to see is known as the St. Jean-Baptiste Massacre, or the St. Jean-Baptiste Day Massacre, sorry. And for listeners out there not familiar with Quebec holidays, the St. Jean-Baptiste Day is basically like a celebration of being French in Quebec. It's there, basically, it's a holiday exclusive to the province of Quebec. Maybe some of the Maritime provinces also celebrate it. I'm not 100% sure. It's on June the 24th every year, and it dates back to, like, I think the 17th century, way back, well before Canada as a country even existed. It was a holiday in that area. And so it's a huge day, pretty much the biggest day of the year on the Quebec calendar in many ways. And in 1985, they had a big show at the Montreal Forum, a big wrestling show on that day, on St. Jean-Baptiste Day. And the Montreal Forum, of course, is where the Montreal Canadiens of the NHL played for many, many years. Legendary arena in not only Canada, but in North America. The site of, you know, countless Stanley Cup victories by the Canadiens. It was also the site of my beloved Calgary Flames' one and only Stanley Cup victory in 1989. They, to this day, they are the only visiting team to ever hoist the Stanley Cup. And it'll never change because the Montreal Forum hasn't been used for 25 years or so. But the Flames were the only visiting team to ever hoist the Stanley Cup on Montreal Forum ice, which is pretty remarkable when you think about it. So yeah, building with a ton of history, a ton of wrestling history. Montreal was a huge territory for wrestling in the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s. By the 80s, things were kind of touch and go. They had some dark periods, especially in the late 70s, and then they kind of had a rebirth in the 80s. And around this time, the Montreal territory was doing all right. You had the Rougeaus, which of course were sons of Jacques Rougeau Sr., who with his brother Johnny Rougeau were a huge tag team in the 50s and 60s in Montreal. And you also had Dino Bravo, you had Rick Martel, So you had some big homegrown stars at that time. And here we are, June 24th, 1985. We're a few months from when the WWF started to run shows. I did some research yesterday on this because I wanted to brush up. And at first, the WWF did joint shows with the Montreal talent and did basically like dream matches, or it was basically like Montreal versus the WWF cards. And they did that for a few months before, of course, Vince, you know, he'll come in at first and he'll, if he has to be partners with somebody, he'll do that, but that'll never last too long. And by, I think, January 1986, it was Vince had maneuvered things that he had exclusive rights to the Montreal Forum, which was, of course, the key arena in the province. And he had TV, and kind of the rest is history. Eventually, of course, the Rougeaus went to the WWF. Bravo went to the WWF. Rick Martel went to the WWF. So this match, these two matches, is kind of a snapshot of a time just prior to everything changing in the province of Quebec, and kind of like a last gasp of the old territory and of native Montreal, native Quebec stars being being able to draw huge crowds to the Montreal Forum. So, Steve, do you have much experience with this particular era of wrestling or area of wrestling?
I do not have any knowledge of the Montreal scene, though I have a fair amount of knowledge of the Garvins and the Rougeaus. One of my early wrestling memories that I was shocked when it happened was the Garvin Flair cage match where Garvin won the title. And I clearly remember it being on a, I believe, a Sunday night and having to take a shower. And the match took up the entire show, right, which was very rare those days. Mm-hmm. You'd see like a, you know, a main event maybe for NWA, and then a bunch of jobber kind of squash matches. And they started right off with the cage, which was like, you know, what is going on? And to like literally had like prepared, it's like, you have to take a shower, you have to take a shower. But they had a TV in the bedroom that you could kind of see from the shower. So I had like the volume up and this little TV and be watching that. And then of course Garvin won, which is even a bigger shock because, you know, Flair beat everybody and you didn't expect Ron Garvin to win the title. So it's just one of those memories from the 80s. There's not many from non-WWF, but just sticks in my head the exact moment where I was. And I wasn't even a big Garvin fan.
Right.
It wasn't very, you know, it's someone who is more loved now going back. But at the time, like, there was nothing really about him that stood out. He was, you know, short and obvious fake blonde hair and, you know, guys like Dusty and Magnum and, you know, Flair and, you know, even Wyndham were bigger names and, you know, better looking and, you know, taller and bigger. Jimmy Garvin, like through WorldCast and or World Class, obviously you listen to WorldCast as well. I never realized that he was already like a 17 to 20 year veteran at that time.
I know, it's crazy.
While he was in. Because he looks so, I mean, even in 83, 84, 85, he looks pretty young.
I know. Yeah, I think he started in the late 60s, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, 68.
Yeah.
68 when I looked it up.
Yeah, it's crazy. I know. Yeah, Garvin, the win over Flair was kind of what made him, turned a lot of fans against him, right? Because he was deemed, you know, unworthy of being the NWA champion and all that. But yeah, going back and looking at Garvin's matches from the 80s, he's a pretty consistently great performer, in my opinion, and was stiff as hell and was, a really good wrestler. And Jimmy Garvin, watching the whole run in 1983 for him in World Class, yeah, he was awesome then. And I'm really interested to see how this unfolds. I've never seen this before. I've had this match or these two matches saved on YouTube in a playlist for probably legit like 5-6 years. and for whatever reason, I've never watched them. I have to give a shout out to my buddy, Sean Whitaker, who has, you know, been trying to make me watch these matches for years, and I never have. But here I am, Sean, finally watching them. And I think we're in for a treat, Steve, because, you know, from what I've heard from everybody, this is some pretty good stuff. So we got two matches, and it's, of course, the same teams involved. I won't explain, I won't spoil anything as to why we're watching two matches, so we'll just let it go. This first match, like I said, Saint-Jean-Baptiste in Quebec, June 24th, 1985. The second match, I believe, is from July. Well, I have the date. I'll get to it in a bit. It's July 19th or something like that, so the following month. All right, so Steve, you want to count us down for this one?
I can do that in 3, 2, 1.
Okay. So here we go. Montreal Forum. Precious is with the Garvins, Jimmy's valet.
Have to tease the hair?
Yep.
Very important.
It was, I mean, it was a great head of hair. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
The footage quality, unfortunately, here, not the best, but sometimes that's what you got to take from stuff from the 80s.
And sometimes that's part of the fun.
Yeah, part of the fun, part of the charm. If you've ever watched cards from the Philadelphia Spectrum in the 1980s, especially the early 1980s, the footage quality can be pretty, pretty rough.
Precious in Jacques' face.
Yeah. Oh. Wrestling
fans, this match. Did he spray him right in the face?
Yeah, I believe so. Precious sprayed Jacques with some perfume before the bell even rang. By Ronnie Garvin, spraying that air purifier in his eyes, and take it from me, that kind of air purifier, according to the commentary. And for this match, we do have English commentary. For the following match, we're going to have French commentary. So, just like Canada, we got bilingual commentary for these matches. I should say both Garvin on top of Raymond Rougeau in the center of the ring. So things are out of control. Jacques is selling it like Rick Martel selling the salt in the eyes from 1981.
Oh, someone else is in the ring now.
Yes, and this is Jacques Rougeau Sr. in the ring.
Senior, yeah.
Yeah. So, like I mentioned.
Gotta get that over.
Yeah.
Oh, he just slugged Precious.
Jesus. Out of control here. So, yeah, like
Ron
I mentioned.
Right, that,
yeah. Jacques Rougeau, senior.
Legitimately.
Yeah. Oh. Double body slam. Jacques Rougeau, senior, was a legend in the city, like I mentioned earlier, but hadn't wrestled in several years at this point. Oh.
I'm fired up.
Yeah. Big beat down.
Yeah, when Ray and Ron were going at it, they were making it look like a shoot.
Yeah.
And obviously it wasn't, but they were working so fast. And
yeah. Chuck Jr. still in his robe, still selling the air purifier. Oh my god.
Somebody help that man.
This is crazy. The crowd is on the edge of their seats. Shock, what a sell. So it looks like the bad guys have left the ring. So yeah,
the announcer is selling that, you know, how dangerous it was to Senior because he had been injured in the past.
Yeah. Yeah, no, this is great stuff. Match hadn't even started. At which point, both
Did anyone have some water? Oh,
now they're back. Oh, man. Oh, we got a pile driver here. Ooh. And Jacques Rougeau Sr., one of the great names,
one of the great names in the annals of professional. The pile driver, like the short pile driver where they just kind of lift him up by the tights.
Yes.
Don't seem to protect him always. Makes me nervous.
Right. You never, well, you don't see pile drivers on WWE TV, but you don't see that version of the pile driver anymore. That's lost to time. No. Yeah.
Sammy Callahan does one similar, kind of like a Cactus Jack, but not like that.
Yeah.
Like, anyone have water in a towel?
Yeah, the referees are pretty useless here. We need some help. Come on. Jacques Sr. is very injured. Jacques Jr. still in serious pain. Ray had to eat a pile driver, yeah. It's a dark day in Quebec.
It's cowardly. Very a cowardly attack, they said.
Cowardly attack on Saint Jean Baptiste Day, a day of celebration in Quebec, and this has turned into a nightmare for the Rougeau family. Mark my
words, wrestling fans. Yeah, typical Americans, no respect for the country that they're visiting.
In what is going to develop, I know Ron had become basically a honorary American at this point, wasn't he? Always billed from Michigan when he wrestled in JCP. I guess that's probably why they did the title switch, the NWA title switch in Detroit, now that I think of it. So we got a stretcher for Jacques Sr. There are two of you and one
woman, and a young lady named Precious seems to think. Yeah, they also, if I remember right, said that Ron was from Charlotte a lot in JCP.
Yes, that's right. Even though on promos he had a thick French Canadian accent. Yeah. It's very much like Roddy Piper, or he's Scottish. He sounds like he's from Saskatchewan. I mean, as a kid, I kind of just—I didn't really realize it. But yeah, later as an adult, listening to Roddy Piper, it's obvious that he's Canadian.
The announcer is basically threatening the Garvins. You just wait.
Yeah. I don't know who the announcers are, but yeah, they're very angry. It looks like Jacques Jr. is bleeding as well.
Yeah, which is, that's kind of a weird.
Yeah. Like, what was it that she sprayed him with? Blood is coming out of his eyes. Oh my god.
It's a flamethrower. Just straight chemicals burn.
So, this is a pretty interesting way to go about things in that this match never started and is not going to happen tonight. It's a pretty cool way.
Oh my god.
Yeah, now you got what's going on in the crowd here.
I don't know, but the announcer just said that Precious deserved to be hit.
Oh, yeah.
Usually you don't condone hitting a woman at all, but she deserved it. She didn't do anything.
1980s wrestling, folks. But yeah, like I was saying, this is a pretty interesting way to build an angle and to build to the next show. You basically sacrifice a match to build to what you would hope for would be even a bigger draw, bigger crowd, more money for the next month. Okay, so now we're cut to the
going
the
on.
The studio right here. I was wondering how long, like I saw the time is only 10 minutes, 32 seconds on the on the video, and then the whole thing went down so fast. I was wondering how they were going to fill up the time. So we're getting a bonus promo here.
I'm glad that we don't live up here. I'm glad we don't live on that rock in Sudbury. I'm glad we don't live with them big mosquitoes.
So they're cutting a promo for, I think, a show in Ontario.
This is great. Ron Garvin looks like a surfer.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, that's my new gimmick, surfer Ronnie Garvin. Yeah, he looks like Sting without the makeup.
Oh my God, this is the greatest thing I've ever seen.
Something as far as the Garvins is concerned, there is no grudge, there is no feud. It's over.
There's no grudge, there's no feud. This is over. They won. They won the feud.
Yeah.
He beat the daddy up too. Senior laying down, bowling, golden. Let me tell you something. Get
gloating about what they've done. Making fun of Jacques Senior having to be stretchered out of the ring. But that's what a heated angle. That's brilliant. That's the kind of wrestling I love, is when they're not afraid to go, you know, nuclear hot if they have to sell an angle.
Garvins are going to see to it. Now, when the Garvins step into the ring,
I say that Jacques Senior should go to Miami. hop in a wheelchair, retire.
There you go. Have a Miami Beach death match. So now we're going into the rematch. This is from the next month, like I said. I don't know about yours, but mine is... Okay, here we go. I'm at 2 seconds. What are you, Steve?
I'm at 16 here. Did you hop to the French version?
Yeah, well, it was just buffering for a bit. So what time are you at now?
I'm at 5 seconds here. I went to the French.
Okay. So I'm at 23 seconds on the French version. This is making for great radio.
I'm with you.
Okay, we're good now. All right. Yeah, that's the issue with YouTube sometimes. That buffering and such. So anyway, we're back. This is the next month. I will get the... exact date here.
Oh, they're not messing around now. No robes into the ring.
Ready to fight. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. They were a little too casual the last time. So this is July 29th, 1985. And this was a pretty loaded show at the Montreal Forum. I think they drew a really big house, something like nearly 18,000, which is pretty close to a sellout, I think, if not a sellout. Okay.
Then brilliant booking.
Yeah.
Brilliant booking there.
Yeah. So I don't know what the previous show drew, but this one drew huge house. Also on this card, we had the Road Warriors taking on, actually, a team that would become the Islanders, King Tonga and the Tonga Kid, in what I believe was the first time they ever teamed. And that was on the undercard. Dino Bravo took on the Masked Superstar, and my boy Dominic DiNucci wrestled in the opener against someone named Destruction Number One, whoever that was. So this was a huge, huge card for Montreal. We just got a war going on right from the get-go. Yeah, this will be a pretty good brawl, I think.
Yes. Second Tonka Kid reference tonight.
Yeah, he's just all over the place. Suddenly he hasn't been relevant in 30 years, and now he's all over the place. Yeah, it's funny. Back-to-back matches as he was brought up as being loosely connected to it all. Oh, wow. And I think we got a blood spoiler alert with Ronnie Garvin wearing white trunks. That's a good indicator that he's planning on getting some color.
Jimmy Garvin.
Jimmy also in white trunks, so yeah, this could get bloody. And we have French commentary for this one. And the footage quality is definitely better.
Yeah. One of my favorite moments at the beginning of the last match was the organ player, like in a hockey game, after they announced each person playing.
Right. It probably was the guy who played the organ for the Canadians.
Ray throwing some punches. They look good.
Yeah. And we got Jacques Senior at ringside, so he's recovered. Oof. Big fist drop from Jacques Junior. I think Ronnie maybe already busted open.
Yeah, not sure from what, but
yeah.
Pile driver maybe.
Ronnie Garvin, maintenant c'est Jimmy Garvin.
The crowd is just red hot.
Eh bien, Frecheuse doit certainement passer un mauvais moment présentement. Regardez ses favoris.
Interesting way to film. I mean, they really just have the one camera at ringside.
Yeah, and there's not much footage of wrestling shows from the Montreal Forum that I can think of, like pre-WWF, of course. Even WWF, there wasn't too many. Oh, yeah, this is just pure violence, just punches, pile drivers. No pretense to a wrestling contest. Although they are going for pins quite early.
After a spike pile driver, geez. Well, and it makes sense they're going after Ron because Jimmy didn't.
Yeah.
Jimmy didn't pull the trigger on the air purifier.
Look out! Oh, right into the boot. Yeah, Ron's getting serious beat down, but now he's making a bit of a comeback here. Hands of stone, after all.
Feel bad for Precious and Jimmy just getting roped into this.
It was all because of their crazy brother Ron. Finally tags out to Jimmy. Biting immediately.
I've really become a big 80s Jimmy Garvin fan.
It's the only good Jimmy Garvin.
Probably not the most popular opinion in the world.
Oh, no, I mean, yeah, like, there's nothing wrong with 80s Jimmy Garvin. It's 90s Jimmy Garvin. That's the issue.
Well, and then realizing now that he was already, you know, about 25 years in at that point.
Yeah. Vicious. And like world class, Montreal going with two referee for tag matches system.
For no reason.
I've never been a fan. I've mentioned this numerous times on Worldcast. I guess by late 83, though, World Class has, I think, done away with the dual refs for tag matches. But for 82, it was in all of them. Oh, we're getting some censorship here. Ron Garvin, too hot for TV with that crimson mask, apparently.
30 X's.
Yeah, I haven't seen, like, I'm familiar, of course, with the big red X, but that was, yeah, like you said, 30 black X's. That's how they do things in Quebec.
Yeah, the two refs, they just end up getting in the way.
Exactly. And
there's only so much. Yeah. Only so much space in the ring.
Yeah, and then the worst is when they both go down to count the pin and they're never in sync with each other and it just looks stupid.
There's some more.
Yeah, Garvin is a bloody, bloody mess. Ron Garvin.
I counted 20 X's there.
Well, he still wants more. He's back in the ring now. Oof. Stiff kicks. Here's the first wrestling move of the match.
Close. Garvin got pegged with something.
Yeah, something got thrown in the ring. Looked almost like glass. Jimmy Garvin's got a chain, it appears.
Two refs can't tell.
Yeah.
Like, here's the other thing. Like, they're both being distracted.
Exactly. That's another thing. Like, if you have
Jacques and just leaving, so yeah, what's the point?
I know. If you have two refs, one, like, the whole point should be that one is watching for, you know, shenanigans or making sure the other, yeah, what's going on is okay in the other corner or whatever, not both focusing on the same action. Yeah, then it totally defeats the purpose.
Good news is that Ron is only down to 15x blood right now.
Slowly getting better.
It's drying up a little bit.
Yeah.
It's like he's gaining health back in the video game.
Yeah, exactly. The health bar is slowly going up, but he's still still looking pretty rough.
Jimmy Garvin qui a réussi à masquer cette corde. Et elle est encore là, je pense.
Things are finally slowing down just a little bit here. Both men down.
Precious not really involved, unless she slipped Jimmy the chain and we didn't see it.
Yeah, probably, but yeah, no. Not much. Oh. Ronnie back in. Double teaming now. Huge drop kick there by Jacques. Oh, here we go. Oh, and that backfired big time by the good guys.
Oh, it deflated the crowd. The crowd was ready to explode.
Yeah. Oh, looks like Jimmy may be singing soprano, as they used to say. Yes.
Oh, that's not Precious.
Another one. Oh, no. Oh, I think I hear the bell. The refs lost control. Yeah, this one's being thrown out.
Oh, yeah. Did he just hit senior? Or just a random fan?
I don't know. I think senior. Yeah, so this feud is not over yet, but fortunately I don't believe there's footage of they would run a cage match as the blow off, of course.
Let's get Ray on the horn. See if we can get that.
Yeah, that would be great. Considering how well this has been built so far, can't imagine what a cage match between the two teams would have been like. Well, that was super fun. Pretty much lived up to my expectations. You too, Steve?
Yeah, and it leaves me wanting more. I want to see the next.
I want to
see what's next. So, I mean, that's a sign of good booking, right? Like, they're going to probably draw even more the next time around.
Mm-hmm. And that's classic, how you can have matches that don't, and conclusively don't have a finish, and, you know, you're not turning the audience away. They're more invested because there's business hasn't been resolved. There's still, yeah, like I said, a cage match. You could milk that in many other ways, keep it going, you know.
Yeah, there looks like there's a losers leave town match.
Okay, so yeah, you could do that too.
Yeah, it's on YouTube.
Oh, really?
Yeah, well, might be.
Shame on me for not looking further. I just assumed it wasn't, because those are the two matches that are always mentioned and pimped are the two we just watched. Well, we'll maybe have to do a sequel to this later. How much time on the Loser Leaves Town match?
There's two different versions, it looks like. One has 12:51 and one has 15:53. I don't know if it's the same match. Well, we can take a look.
Interesting. Yeah, well then that's good news. Something to look forward to when we go back to the province of Quebec in the future. We'll keep going with this feud because it's pretty cool. Yeah, that was fun. And the match, absolutely. Yeah, the match from Toronto earlier was fun too. And, you know, but this is a heated blood feud, and it doesn't get too much better than that in professional wrestling, as far as I'm concerned. So
no, like the crowd's bought in, complete heat. There's a element of realism to it.
Yeah. Oh, totally. Yeah, that was, and then having the original match be on Saint Jean Baptiste Day, you know, and then giving it the great name, the Saint Jean Baptiste Day Massacre, and having that as the start of everything, it just makes the story even better. And it's great. Yeah, then you finally, like, how many houses you can draw? You have the first match that doesn't even start, then you have the first real match, which is too out of control and ends in a DQ, and then you start adding the stipulations. You could do, you know, you could do all kinds of different matches. You could get Jacques Senior eventually maybe involved in a six-man and bring in someone else for the Garvins, maybe a hired gun or some like an old-time Montreal heel or something to team with the Garvins. There's so many possibilities that you can
Jacques Senior spanking Precious.
You know, oh, yeah, there you go. Yeah, I should have built to. Maybe it did at some point. You never know. Maybe we'll find that footage. So, yeah, this was another fun one, Steve. It's always great to look at matches that, yeah, never seen before. And I'm glad I waited on this one for the right time. And to do it like this, watch it live for the first time, the matches from Montreal, that was really cool. So, next time, I don't know, we have a lot of options. We have an ongoing playlist of ideas. It's getting pretty heavy on Japanese matches, but that's sort of the nature of the beast with YouTube, is there's a ton of footage from Japan out there, of course, that is easy to find. For some of the other countries, you have to dig around a bit, but we'll come up with something interesting for next time. And yeah, so some plugs before we leave, Steve?
Yeah, you can check me out on Main Event for the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed. We're having to dig down to talk about stuff for present-day wrestling. But like I said, we're looking at a couple older WCW matches during our second segment. And you can also catch me with Nate Milton on TDT Talks on the Kings of Sport Wrestling. Kings of Sport, it's not wrestling, just Kings of Sport podcast network. And it's my buddy Nate also has a show on post wrestling called the Rocky Maivia Picture Show. And he's got these great shirts that just came out.
Yeah.
It's a combination of Rocky Maivia with the Rocky Horror Picture Show. They're selling like hotcakes. I think they sold like 40 in the first week.
Yeah, so, it's great. Yeah, because it's Rocky Maivia and the Tim Curry pose or whatever, right? From Rocky Horror Picture Show. Yeah, Yeah, whoever came up with that design, that was a brilliant idea.
Yeah, it's good stuff. So always fun to look at this stuff, and it's nice to be able to find some enjoyment in these times. And what better way to look back at old violent wrestling?
Yeah, it's been several weeks in a row that we've had bloody matches. I think it was just the first week that we did International House of Combat that neither match had blood in it. So yeah, we'll have to keep that the blood streak going for next week, and there's plenty of possibilities. For myself, it's yeah, the usual. I mean, the feed is never been more full of shows on a weekly basis than it's been in the last few weeks. We're dipping into, you know, we're taking a page out of the Place to Be Nation 5-6 years after they first started doing non-wrestling podcasts. So yeah, we have Gideon Guys with Johnny Sorrow and my longtime friend Travis Woloshin looking at the Legends of Tomorrow show, the DC show from the CW network. That's the first non-wrestling show on the feed. And we have, or Travis has another one coming up at the end of the week. It'll drop. It's called Yours, Mine, and the Truth. And it's him. The concept of this show is Travis taking something that he really loved as a kid in sort of the 80s and early 90s and looking back on it now to see if it was something that was just, you know, well, it was great when you were a kid, but it doesn't really hold up as an adult. Or is it something that, you know, is transcendent, is that is great when you're young and is still great today? So it's an interesting concept for a show where he's going to be looking at, you know, a band from the 90s. And that in the first show, I believe it's about the band Extreme. If you remember them, Steve, they were popular in the early 90s. For a few years. And Travis, they were his favorite band. We went to high school together, and he would buy the tape and the CD. So whenever they had a new album out, he would buy both. That's how big of a fan he was. He would buy both the tape and the CD. And he was just, he just lived and died by the band Extreme at that time. So he's going back now almost 30 years later to see if Extreme holds up. And he's got other ideas, and it should be really good. So that's the second non-wrestling show on the feed coming up on this Friday. So yeah, probably Friday night it'll drop. And yeah, and then we have the usual wrestling shows, Worldcast, Greetings from Allentown, Days of Thunder, Military Industrial Suplex, Through the Years, Boom Goes the Dynamite. It's just, there's a lot now. And I also, of course, we have International House of Combat. I've been doing The Greatness of Randy Savage, although I've slowed down a bit on those just because there's too many shows now. And I just, maybe I'll sprinkle it out, the future episodes a little more sparingly in the future, when there's not so many shows being released almost on a daily, well, basically a daily basis now. It's really crazy. So, yeah. And, yeah, thanks for listening. Hope everyone's enjoying this so far. It's been a blast to do. Watch along on YouTube. And, yeah, next week we'll have some more matches from somewhere around the globe, yet to be determined, but it'll be some fun stuff. So we'll see you all then. Good night.